for one, was very proud of our president, who stood there and talked about America, talked about the goodness in America, talked about the next century being the century of the individual, talked about his family, talked about your families, and talked about our great country. That's the kind of a man we need. And I thought Mr. Carter would explain his tax reform proposal. But he talked about the rich and how they get all the loopholes. He didn't mention his $41,000. He took off his taxes. It's called the investment tax credit. I'm certain not. How many of you took your investment tax credit this year? I don't think anyone here qualified. I didn't. President Ford didn't. But he took $41,000 off his taxes for the investment tax credit. Now, of course, that's not a loophole because it helps Mr. Carter. He bought some peanut shelling equipment or something down in Plains, Georgia. So I want to say that I never had any doubt about who would do the best job, and I want to be sincere and I want to be candid. But as I said up to tonight, President Ford has the experience. He's demonstrated that experience. He's demonstrated his leadership. He's demonstrated his competence. And I think he proved it tonight to the American people. And don't let me indicate that both men worked very hard. I think the questions were extremely well prepared by the panel. They were very tough questions, not harsh, but tough questions. I think Governor Carter was a little nervous at first. I think he came out wanting to do the best he could, and I think he left knowing he finished second. So I think that's just the way it was. And I just think he blew it there, or somebody blew it. At least when he was talking, everything stopped. And so we're going back to work. Well, we're working right now, but I think everyone here is pretty much on the right side. I want to say one word about party unity, because I know I'm in the state where you've had a great governor. His name was Ronald Reagan. And I think if you watched the convention in Kansas City that last night and saw President Ford, the winner, and Governor Reagan, the loser, stand there together facing millions of American people and talking about the future of our country and about the direction of our country, I think it put to rest 99 9/10% of any differences we may have in our party. And that's because we were fortunate to have two great Americans as candidates while they didn't have any at all. And that's the difference. I'm not certain why I'm on the ticket with President Ford, but I do know that when President Ford went to see Governor Reagan after he'd won the nomination, that one of the names mentioned by Governor Reagan was Bob Dole. So I would guess that that might have had some influence on President Ford. I understand the president had six names. But then the following morning, on the early news, it had it narrowed to four. And one of those was Ann Armstrong, and the one who was going to be selected had to be back by noon to be there with the president. She was in Scotland, and so I scratched her off the list. Another was Bill Ruckelshaus, a fine Republican from Indiana. He was up in Tacoma, Washington. That's a long way from Kansas City. And besides, his name is pretty long for a button. So that left Senator Baker and Senator Dole, who are still on this speculative list. I kept sending out my list all the time, but I discovered in the last day that I didn't send any to the president's hotel. So he didn't know what a great fellow I really was. But I told my wife, Elizabeth, when it was down to Baker and Dole, I said, if they don't go in alphabetical order, I think I've got a chance. And so a little later that morning, the press started gathering in the corridor of our hotel room, and our room was right next to Governor Connally's suite. And as I could hear all the commotion outside, I told Elizabeth, I said, put your ear to the door and see if they're mentioning my name. That's legal in Kansas City if you listen from the inside out. And they did mention my name. I don't know in what way. Maybe they thought, sure, it can't be this guy or something. I don't know what. But there was some doubt in my mind, and since I was so near the suite of Governor Connally, and thinking the president might have gotten the wrong number, when he did call, I accepted before I identified myself. And I think that's... So, I'm just very proud to be in California. I used to come to San Diego quite often. We were talking about having our convention here in 1972. It was either going to be San Diego or my hometown of Russell, Kansas. And we were ruled out because both our motels were booked solid. And then we came to San Diego and had some problems and ended up in Miami. But we're very happy to be back. I understand things look better even than the polls indicate across this country. And looks better than even the latest polls indicate in the great state of California. And so we're just very pleased to be here. I'm very proud to be on the ticket with President Ford. I think he did a great job tonight, and I know everyone in this room is proud of the way he expressed himself for America. And let me reemphasize time and time again, he talked about the real problems in America. He didn't appeal to anyone's prejudice. He tried to appeal to all the American people, rich or poor, black or white, Spanish-speaking, farmers, doctors, labor union members, professional people, whatever. He talked as a president should talk to the American people. And I think he said it all in one word. You can judge us by his promises and my performance. He was talking about his own performance as president. I think it's been remarkable. I think he's done an outstanding job. We're very pleased that you've been here. We're grateful for your volunteer efforts in this area. We want to win, and we thank you very much. Thank you.
I could, but I don't think I will. I looked at it a little different way. I tried to be objective, and Ford came off a very clear winner. It just seems to me that the president addressed himself to the issues and to the American people and the future of America when he talked about our third century being the century of the individual, talked about his family and our families, and didn't try to appeal to the prejudice of different interest groups. Carter referred to those who look for loopholes and the rich and other so-called buzzwords that may have some appeal to some groups, but in the long run, they're not really very presidential. So as I looked at it, and I know you're surprised to learn that I thought President Ford clearly won the debate. I have that feeling. In fact, I have a feeling we may even be ahead in the country right now. And if he keeps on giving interviews, we may even go ahead by a few more points. No, I really wasn't. I didn't expect that to be in the debate. I think those are areas that we think about, we don't talk about. Maybe they should have been brought up, but it just seemed to me that the American people are concerned about the issues. No one raised those questions. I thought the panel did an excellent job. They were tough questions, not harsh, but tough questions. And I have to say that both President Ford and Governor Carter did a commendable job. I thought Governor Carter was a little nervous. I guess he was trying to decide which position to reveal tonight. But on balance, Ford won very clearly. Thank you.
Senator Dole, since President Ford was running behind Jimmy Carter in California before tonight's debate, do you think the debate has helped any, or do you really judge?
Well, I want to be very realistic. I think the president did very well. The president called me after the debate, or the call was placed, and I talked with the president. I think he felt good about it. I thought, and I told him so, that he had done an outstanding job, and he said, I've done an been doing an outstanding job, so we then went on to something else. But I think he felt good about it, and as I viewed it, and of course, you know, I've got to admit a bias in this whole thing. I just listened to Senator Mondale rave about Governor Carter. I would say very honestly that I felt both Governor Carter and President Ford did a credible job. But I think the one thing that shows through very clearly for President Ford is he was in total command. He has his facts. He has his programs. He understands government. And he was talking about the future of America. The third century is a century of the individual. He talked about freedom. He talked about family. He didn't try to appeal to some prejudice someone might have, and I think Governor Carter used that tactic a number of times.
As you look ahead to your own debate with Senator Mondale, how do you think it might be different from this, and how do you see it going as compared to what we saw tonight?
Well, I hope it's continuous, without interruption. And I would hope that it's you know, it's difficult when you have a question and a follow-on question and response to that there really isn't all that much give and take. The questions were very good and very tough, not harsh, but good questions. But again, it isn't really that free-for-all debate that you think about, I guess, in the Lincoln-Douglas debates. I would guess that we're going to be somewhat constrained because, of course, I'm supporting President Ford and Mondale supporting Governor Carter. We're pretty much bound by that. I don't say that critically. I just say that that's our role. We're not policymakers. I can't get up and say what I would do next year, or Mondale can't say what he would do. So it's going to be a little different debate.
Do you think the tone of it is likely to be different, sharper, or any different at all?
I don't think so. We respect one another. You know, unless something should happen in the interim, I don't see any reason for anything but a lofty debate on the issues. I didn't find any surprises. He still hasn't told us where he stands. That would have been a surprise had he done that.
Has he discussed his strategy with you for the San Francisco debate?
No.
He hasn't at all?
No.
Senator Hughes earlier today said something that seems to be different from what President Ford said tonight on TV. I believe it was in Nebraska that you said that any person who was realistic at all could not expect the Republicans to take control of either the House or the Senate this year after the elections. And President Ford said flatly tonight he thought the Republicans could win in the House. Now, he's not being realistic?
Well, he may have some more recent survey data. This thing is moving so quickly. And I've been on the road, and I haven't been able to read the New York Times on a daily basis, and he probably has information that I don't have.
You get all your survey data from New York Times?
A great deal of it, very honestly, from the networks and the Times poll.
What did the American people learn that was new this year from this debate that they didn't know before the debate?
I think they learned a great deal about the candidates. I think that's really what it was all about. I think I didn't see any new ground broken, but I think it gave the American people a better perception of Governor Carter and of President Ford and how they addressed the issues. You know, the issues haven't changed all that much. You can't strike or plow some new ground, but it gave them a chance to review some of Carter's spending programs. It gave Carter a chance to knock the president on the vetoes. The president had to correct him about on the vetoes, but... you know, they had a good exchange. I don't suggest it wasn't dispirited.
Did he make any points against the president that you cut?
I can't think of any. We're going to review the text again tomorrow, but I don't really think he made any telling points. I think he made some points on his behalf. He talked about unemployment. That's certainly something that helps Mr. Governor Carter. But on the other hand, President Ford talked about the 88 million employed and the 4 million who've found jobs the last 17 months, and the fact that we've cut inflation. So I think they each made points, but I don't think they're points that they haven't made before. They may have underscored those.
Senator, the debate would be critical. Do you think that the upcoming debates, the two debates remaining between Governor Carter and President Ford, will influence people quite as much as this first one?
Well, it was my feeling the first one you would have the greatest viewing audience because people are curious, so they're really interested. I would hope that on the foreign policy debate we have an equally large audience, because that's really President Ford's greatest strength, area of strength and experience. But it was a critical debate. I think it really gave the American people a chance to judge. And it's one thing for me to stand here and Senator Mondale in Connecticut and say, well, our man won. Now, the people are going to decide who really won. We may have a viewpoint. We hope it's not biased. We hope it's accurate. But the American people are really going to judge who won the debate, as they did in the Nixon-Kennedy debates when they judged that Kennedy won. Well, Jody Powell, his press secretary, was on one of the networks and said that wasn't how Governor Carter viewed that. So I can only take his word for it.
Senator, it's been said often that even more than the issues in this debate, what was important was how the men came across as people. How do you think Governor Carter came across as a person?
Well, I think he started off, frankly, a little nervous. I think as he went into the debate, anyone would be a little nervous. I plan to be a little nervous. Don't plan it, but it's going to happen. So, but I don't suggest he wasn't in command of what he was saying. I just suggest he didn't say the right things.
Senator,
I don't think so. I don't think the majority, but I think a great number of the voters are uncommitted. Well, I like to confirm a poll result I heard tonight, but I can't confirm it, so I can't mention it, but it showed us ahead in the country. But there is movement. I just know there's movement. Now, it may move again. It's a very volatile election. And when Carter goes from 32 points to 6, or wherever it may be now, there's something going on. The electorate is really looking for the right man or the best man, and I really believe it's going to be President Ford. I've heard projections today that Ford will carry California by 300,000 votes or more. Now, that's based on some polling data. I don't know if that's a fact, because the election can change so quickly. He's out, as I understand, in some of the southern states this week. I hope to see him before the week is out. If we can make connections, he's coming in and I'm leaving, so I hope we can see each other.
Senator, twice tonight you emphasized that the debate showed Ford was in control. Do you think that that is an issue, that there is some doubt that he was in control, or that there is some control?
Last question.
Well, I think there's been, I don't say doubt, but I think many wanted the president to demonstrate, as he did tonight, that he really is in command. He is the president. He's not some challenger, just another candidate. He's a president of the United States who has a grasp of all the problems and knows what he's done and what the administration's done and what the Democrat Congress has done. And I just felt very certain that the president had that bearing, I guess is even a better word, that presidential bearing that's so important to be perceived as having that quality.
And what bearing?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to be, I could say something very critical. I don't say that. I think he did a good job, but I really don't believe that he appealed to the country as a whole. I think he appealed to, he used the word loophole, he used the word rich, he used the word lie. I think he appeals to sort of the base instincts of people that it really isn't a presidential bearing. It may be politic, but it's not presidential.
Thank you.
I mean, standing.
Yeah. Anticipated?
No, I think he was just in command. I think his bearing was one of the president, not aloof, but a man who knew what he wanted to say and said it and went on to the next question. Thank you.
Nuclear power. We have increased the research and development. Under the Energy Research and Development Agency, very substantially, to ensure that our nuclear power plants are safer, that they are more efficient, and that we have adequate safeguards. I think you have to have greater oil and gas production, more coal production, more nuclear production, and in addition, you have to have energy conservation.
Mr. Ganem?
Mr. President, I'd like to return for a moment to this problem of unemployment. You have vetoed or threatened to veto a number of jobs bills passed or in development in the Democratic Congress, Democratic-controlled Congress. Yet at the same time, the government is paying out, I think it is $17 billion, perhaps $20 billion a year in unemployment compensation caused by the high unemployment. Why do you think it is better to pay out unemployment compensation to idle people than to put them to work in public service jobs?
The bills that I've vetoed, the one for an additional $6 billion, was not a bill that would have solved our unemployment problems. Even the proponents of it admitted that no more than 400,000 jobs would be made available. Our analysis indicates that something in the magnitude of about 150 to 200,000 jobs would be made available. Each one of those jobs would have cost the taxpayer $25,000. In addition, the jobs would not be available right now. They would not have materialized for about 9 to 18 months. The immediate problem we have is to stimulate our economy now so that we can get rid of unemployment. What we have done is to hold the lid on spending in an effort to reduce the rate of inflation. And we have proven, I think, very conclusively that you can reduce the rate of inflation and increase jobs. For example, as I have said, we have added some 4 million jobs in the last 17 months. We have now employed 88 million people in America, the largest number in the history of the United States. We've added 500,000 jobs in the last 2 months. Inflation is the quickest way to destroy jobs. And by holding the lid on federal spending, we have been able to do a good job, an affirmative job, in inflation, and as a result, have added to the jobs in this country. I think it's also appropriate to point out that through our tax policies, we have stimulated added employment throughout the country. The investment tax credit, the tax incentives for expansion and modernization of our industrial capacity. It's my opinion that the private sector, where 5 out of the 6 jobs are, where you have permanent jobs with the opportunity for advancement, is a better place than make work jobs under the program recommended by the Congress.
Just to follow up, Mr. President, the Congress has just passed a $3.7 billion appropriation bill, which would provide money for the Public Works Jobs Program that you earlier tried to kill by your veto of the authorization legislation. In light of the fact that unemployment again is rising, or has in the past 3 months, I wonder if you have rethought that question at all, whether you would consider allowing this program to be funded, or will you veto that money bill?
Well, that bill has not yet come down to the Oval Office, so I am not in a position to make any judgment on it tonight. But that is an extra $4 billion that would add to the deficit, which would add to the inflationary pressures, which would help to destroy jobs in the private sector, not make jobs where the jobs really are. These make-work temporary jobs, dead-end as they are not the kind of jobs that we want for our people. I think it's interesting to point out that in the 2 years that I've been president, I've vetoed 56 bills. Congress has sustained 42 vetoes. As a result, we have saved over $9 billion in federal expenditures. And the Congress, by overriding the bills that I did veto, the Congress has added some $13 billion to the federal expenditures and to the federal deficit. Now, Governor Carter complains about the deficits. that this administration has had. And yet he condemns the vetoes that I have made that have saved the taxpayer $9 billion and could have saved an additional $13 billion. Now, he can't have it both ways. And therefore, it seems to me that we should hold the lid, as we have, to the best of our ability, so we can stimulate the private economy and get the jobs where the jobs are, 5 out of 6 in this economy.
Governor Carter?
Well, Mr. Ford doesn't seem to put into perspective the fact that when 500,000 more people are out of work than there were 3 months ago, or we have 2.5 million more people out of work than were when he took office, that this touches human beings. I was in a city in Pennsylvania not too long ago, near here, and there were about 4,000 or 5,000 people in the audience. It was on a train trip. And I said, how many adults here are out of work? About 1,000 raised their hands. Mr. Ford actually has fewer people now in the private sector in non-farm jobs than when he took office. And still he talks about a success. 7.9% unemployment is a terrible tragedy in this country. He says he's learned how to match unemployment with inflation. That's right. We've got the highest inflation we've had in 25 years right now, except under this administration, and that was 50 years ago. And we've got the highest unemployment we've had under Mr. Ford's administration since the Great Depression. This affects human beings, and his insensitivity in providing those people a chance to work has made this a welfare administration and not a work administration. He hasn't saved $9 billion with his vetoes. There's only been a net saving of $4 billion. And the cost in unemployment compensation, welfare compensation, and lost revenues has increased $23 billion in the last 2 years. This is a typical attitude that really causes havoc in people's lives. And then it's covered over by saying that our country has naturally got a 6% unemployment rate, or a 7% unemployment rate, and a 6% inflation. It's a travesty. It shows a lack of leadership. And we've never had a president since the war between the states that vetoed more bills. Mr. Ford vetoed 4 times as many bills as Mr. Nixon per year. And 11 of them have been overridden. One of his bills that was overridden, he only got 1 vote in the Senate and 7 votes in the House from Republicans. So this shows a breakdown in leadership.
Under the rules, I must stop you there. Mrs. Drew?
Governor Carter, I'd like to come back to the subject of taxes. You have said that you want to cut taxes for the middle and lower income groups.
Right.
But unless you're willing to do such things as reduce the itemized deductions for charitable contributions or home mortgage payments or interest or taxes or capital gains, you can't really raise sufficient revenue to provide an overall tax cut of any size. So how are you going to provide that tax relief that you're talking about?
Now we have such a grossly unbalanced tax system, as I said earlier, that it is a disgrace. Of all the tax benefits now, 25% of them go to the 1% of the richest people in this country. Over 50%, 53 to be exact, percent of the tax benefits go to the 14% richest people in this country. And we've had a 50% increase in payroll deductions since Mr. Nixon went in office 8 years ago. Mr. Ford has advocated since he's been in office over $5 billion in reductions for corporations, special interest groups, and the very, very wealthy who derive their income, not from labor, but from investments. That's got to be changed. A few things that can be done. We have now a deferral system so that the multinational corporations who invest overseas, if they make $1 million in profits overseas, they don't have to pay any of their taxes unless they bring their money back into this country. When they don't pay their taxes, the average American pays the taxes for them. Not only that, but it robs this country of jobs, because instead of coming back with that $1 million and creating a shoe factory, say in New Hampshire, Vermont, if the company takes the money down to Italy and builds a shoe factory, they don't have to pay any taxes on the money. Another thing is a system called DISC, which was originally designed, proposed by Mr. Nixon, to encourage exports. This permits a company to create a dummy corporation to export their products and then not to pay the full amount of taxes on them. This cost our government about $1.4 billion a year. And when those rich corporations don't pay that tax, the average American taxpayer pays it for them. Another one that's very important is the business deductions. Jet airplanes, first-class travel, the $50 martini lunch. The average working person can't take advantage of that, but the wealthier people can. Another system is where a dentist can invest money in, say, raising cattle, and can put in $100,000 of his own money, borrow $900,000, that makes a million, and mark off a great amount of loss through that procedure. There was one example, for instance, where somebody produced pornographic movies. They put in $30,000 of their own money and got $120,000 in tax savings. Well, these special kinds of programs have robbed the average taxpayer and have benefited those who are powerful and who can employ lobbyists and who can have the CPAs and the lawyers to help them benefit from the roughly 8,000 pages of the tax code. The average American person can't do it. You can't hire lobbyists out of unemployment compensation checks.
Governor, to follow up on your answer, in order for any kind of tax relief to really be felt by the middle and lower income people, you need...